upon the firms, because they still have to enter the contract. We can still get it upon demand, and so we're just taking out that filing requirement, and I know the firms will be very happy about that.
And we are supportive.
We are supportive.
Any questions?
Oh, I guess our chair is gone. Any questions?
No.
I don't have it.
None for me.
I don't have any questions.
Okay.
Well, so
great.
No, this isn't scheduled for a hearing.
That is the extent of the testimony on this bill.
Okay. Oh, here it goes back. I took it.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm going to ask for any questions, and there wasn't any. So,
so we passed it out.
Oh, we passed it out? Yeah, can I vote?
We'd like to hear.
Yeah. So there were no questions. So thank you very much. Were there any other people who want to testify on that bill at this time? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2086. And do we have any discussion?
I move House Bill 2086 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer moves that we send the House Bill 2086 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Thank you.
Do we want to start a carrier for that measure?
Yeah. Before we finish that, would you like to carry that one?
I will, unless you would prefer putting it on the consent calendar.
Do you want to make a motion to that effect?
I move that we place 2086 on the consent calendar.
Motion has been made that we place House Bill 2086 on the consent calendar. Any discussion about that? Any objection? So ordered.
This is the one you already sent the follow-up.
Yes.
Okay. So, if you want to do, just give ahead of 20.
Okay, so we're going to skip 2087 for the moment, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2088. And we have the same people. Yeah, just come on up and do that while she brings me the list. Yeah, would you read the summary?
House Bill 2088 directs the Secretary of State to accept reports of waste, inefficiency, or abuse that are submitted to the Secretary of State other than those submitted through the government waste hotline. It stipulates that the identity of a person making a report by any method is to be kept confidential. No fiscal or revenue impact on this measure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Chair Riley, members of the committee, Chuck Hibner, Director of the Audits Division. I couldn't have said it any better myself. we had Department of Justice do a little analysis for us on our 800 hotline, which was described as a 800 number. And what they came away with was the confidentiality protections that are afforded to someone who were to call in on our 800 number. It's very restrictive, and it seemed to us a little bit ridiculous that you couldn't use another method, call in on our standard phone line if you had something to report. We've set up a website now for folks to report this, and for us to set that up then not be able to provide them protection didn't seem quite right. So really the focus of this statute is to expand it so that the alligators, no matter what the source of the allegation, would be afforded the same level of protection. That's it in a nutshell.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm assuming that you're collecting the names. You're just keeping them confidential. You're not taking anonymous complaints, or are you?
Chair Riley, Representative Beyer. It depends upon the alligator. We've got an assortment of alligators that will only do so anonymously. We have a lot that do provide their names as well, and we do afford confidentiality under the statute for those that do give us their names. And where we can, we certainly try to encourage people to come forward by name so that we can get additional information. But it's totally up to them.
Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many reports do you get a year? Just out of curiosity.
Chair Riley, Representative Edwards. Okay. We get about 500 per year reports of fraud, waste, and abuse. But they're, I mean, by all rights, they're not all fraud, waste, and abuse. Some people just don't like to pay their taxes, and they pick this way to complain about it. But we do submit a annual report on the hotline as a part of the statute that does summarize the calls we receive, the number of that are valid reports, the number of that turn into audits, and those sorts of things. If you'd like, we can provide you a copy of that report if you'd like more information and some of the statistics.
Follow up. Yeah, I would be interested in that, and I'd be interested in knowing just out of the 500 reports, how many audits are triggered by the public reporting process, and how many just result in a phone call and then kind of case closed.
Mm-hmm. Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, we'll provide you that report that has a lot of that summary data in there, and if there's additional information you need, because it may not have as much detail as you'd like to the ones that we don't follow up on, let us know. We'll be happy to either provide information to the committee or to yourself.
If you provide that to the entire committee, that would be great.
Be happy to.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else that would like to give testimony on House Bill 2088? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2088, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2088. Any discussion on this bill? Any motion on this bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2088 to the floor with due passage recommendation.
Representative Thatcher has moved that we send House Bill 2088 to the floor with a due passage recommendation. Any discussion?
I would like to add that do I have to make a separate motion to put it on the consent calendar?
It can be one.
I'd also like to suggest we put it on the consent calendar.
Okay. Representative Thatcher moves that we pass this to the floor with a due pass recommendation on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Any objection? Passes unanimously. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on 2087, and would you come forward and tell us about that, or would you tell us about it first?
I would be glad to, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2087 creates the crime of obstructing an audit or investigation that's conducted on or behalf of the Secretary of State. It designates that violation as a Class C felony, which would be punishable by a maximum of 5 years imprisonment, a fine of up to $125,000, or both. If I may check, that's all I have at this time.
Go ahead, Mr. Hibner.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, Chuck Hibner, Director of the Audits Division. I guess the inspiration for this bill is my attempt to provide as much as many resources to our auditors as possible. In looking at what other states are doing around measures to help inspire candor when we're doing our audit work, one of the things that is available to other state audit shops is a statute of this nature. Though the instances of non-candor are not a lot, you know, I can probably from my 12 years in auditing, probably, you know, count, you know, 2-3 times that have actually been able to at least that I've known of that we haven't gotten truthful representations. And the instances of intimidation of someone we're trying to interview, again, you know, is can be counted on one hand, at least that I know of. To be able to provide my auditors with an additional tool, additional incentive for folks to be as candid as possible, is something that I'm trying to do here. As far as the penalty, we kind of left that in Ledge Council's court. I had no idea, and the Ledge Council person that worked on this said she could find similar sorts of penalty to relate it to, so we could get something that seemed at least make sense as compared with other things of its type. Truly, we're just looking for an incentive here to compel people to be truthful and honest with the auditors, whether we're doing audit work, whether we're doing our hotline work, whether we're following up on state laws that pertains to state employees. You know, my feeling is that it's not good. It's good state policy. It's bad state policy for people to be lying to auditors. So, you know, once you become an employee of the state, we would just like to be able to have that. So that really, I think, is all I have to say on that.
And these are maximum penalties, is that correct, and not...
Chair Riley, in my reading of the bill, yes, yeah.
Any questions from Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you speak a little bit to the general tone of an audit, you know, the interplay between the auditor and the agency or people being audited? Is it usually cooperative, or does it get contentious? And perhaps you could speak to that.
Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, both, all. I'd say for the most part, at least in the environment we're in now, we get very good cooperation. You know, people like going to the dentist don't like it, but, you know, they understand that it's necessary. People in government understand that's a part of what happens when you're in government, is you get audited, and audited quite often. So people that have been around a while understand, and for the most part, I mean, a huge majority of the part, they work well with us. There have been times in our history where it's been easier to get our work done than in others, and in moments where we just can't quite get it right the first time, and we're headed down a trail that's not the right trail, we spend quite a bit of time trying to get to the truth, and you know, time is money, and you know, time is time, and we're trying to get things done and out as quickly as possible. So to provide a deterrent, you know, in those rare instances where we do find ourselves not quite getting the straight scoop, could be important. You know, it is strictly a deterrent. That's I think what we're going for. But for the most part, to answer your question directly, I know I kind of rambled. We do get pretty good response from folks.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Mr.
Chair. I guess the concern that I'm working through in my mind here is that I certainly want people to be compliant. I also, though, I want to balance that against a concern for setting up so emboldening the auditor's office that you've got a bunch of cowboys running around, you know, flashing badges and saying, you know, comply or else. And I bring that up because in my own background as a small businessman, there was a local agency that monitored us, and whenever I was there as the manager, the guy that would come by and do it was the air quality monitoring was very nice and very cordial, and we could have a very productive discussion as soon as I wasn't around, and he was talking with supervisors of the supervisory level. I mean, he literally had a badge that he'd always flash, and conversation was immediately unproductive from there on.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of pulling rank and trying to throw his weight around, and so that would be my concern.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying I don't support this, but have you thought through that? Now, that's what was driving my prior question as well, because I think in general the more that, while it may be like going to the dentist for a lot of people, they don't necessarily want to comply, the more cordial the whole process can go, I would imagine it would be more productive and efficient. So maybe thoughts about that?
Yeah, Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think that there is that risk, and it could be about personalities. And, you know, 10 years, 15 years from now, what we're talking about now could certainly have a different effect. All I can say is the way that we're running the organization now, we're very much trying to work in a cooperative way. And I know agencies, almost all the agencies are trying to do the same thing. It's what this is for is those couple instances that I have run into where we know we haven't gotten candor, and we've told the manager, the director, whatever, and really nothing has happened. But again, that's rare. So, you know, we're talking about a policy question that if we had it in place, would help us, you know, a couple times, you know, every 5 years. And that is the discussion, you know, whether that is worthy and whether we can maintain our discipline, to work with people, as well. So I certainly understand where you're coming from.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Anyone else wanting to testify on House Bill 2087? Seeing none, I'm going to close this public hearing, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2087. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I apologize for not mentioning this before. I was shuffling my papers, but I should mention House Bill 2087, it notes on the bottom of the staff measure summary, I didn't mention it before, has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Legislative Fiscal Office indicates that the measure will have minimal fiscal impact, but that there are other reasons to warrant review of the bill by the Committee on Ways and Means.
With that, any questions or discussion about this?
Maybe I have a question. It kind of talks of any person commits the crime of obstructing an audit for any audits. It looks like, I'm just wondering if it applies to any audits conducted by the Secretary of State that could be against individuals too. So I just wonder if that's...
I might be able to clarify, at least in part, it may be, Mr. Hidner may also be able to speak to.
Would you come up and speak to that?
It does apply only to state agency employees.
Yeah,
it may be on any audit, but it implies only to state.
Chair Riley, that's true. It would be state employees would be the only one subject to the penalty, but it certainly would be any of the performance information technology financial audits that we do perform, in our broader authority, and also the investigation work that we do.
And simply for the record, your name.
I'm sorry, Chuck Hibner, Director of the Audit Division.
Thank you. I was just breezing through it.
Okay.
I have a question for Patrick, and that is, if it has minimal impact financially, why does it have to go to Ways and Means?
Let me answer that instead of Patrick.
All right.
It's because we were told it does.
Thank you. I just want to ask the obvious question.
Yeah. And we ask again, and it does.
Okay.
So with that, any other comments, questions? Does anyone have a motion on this bill? Representative Edwards?
I move that we send this bill to the floor with a... due pass. Oh, no. And a Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards recommends that moves that we send this bill to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation and ask them to move it onto the floor. I'm going to have a voice vote on this one. Would you do that vote for me, please? Call the roll.
Aye.
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 Having received the unanimous vote, House Bill 2087 will be passed to Ways and Means. These two? Okay. So I'm going to open a public hearing now on both House Bill 2090 and 2091.
One, maybe just one of the two, I guess, because they're going to be different.
can do both at the same time.
That's good. Okay, that's good.
Absolutely. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2090 prohibits the Secretary of State from disclosing Social Security numbers, federal employer identification numbers, and taxpayer identification numbers provided in certain documents that are filed with the Secretary of State. It deletes the requirement that such numbers be included in certain documents that are filed and directs the Secretary of State to develop a system to establish unique identifiers for persons filing statements under the Central Filing System for Farm Products and to seek approval for that system with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. There's an emergency clause that this measure would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. Included in your packets is the Dash 1 amendment, which should have been distributed to your offices yesterday. That amendment is a rewrite of Section 15 of the bill, and I believe Tim Martinez of the Oregon Bankers Association will be speaking to that amendment or is available to do so.
Okay. You're going to have to guide me through this. It's the first one we've had of the amendment.
Certainly.
First of all, Peter Threlkill.
Threlkill, yes, correct. I'm Peter Threlkill. I'm the director of the Corporation Division. And House Bill 2090 is something that we really started looking at here in the last 2 to 3 years. We missed out on the last legislative session to be able to craft legislation for it. But really it's our attempt to address concerns that we have with the ongoing problem of identity theft. And what it does, it eliminates an obsolete requirement to report what should be confidential information, and it exempts the Secretary of State from requirements to disclose that confidential information under Oregon public record law. The other thing is that it makes changes to the central filing system for farm products in response to rules that the U.S. Department of Agriculture drafted this last fall to allow states to go change from requiring a Social Security number on a debtor to creating a unique identifier that can be used to help track that. And we would work with U.S. Department of Agriculture and the banking industry and other stakeholders in developing that. So as you know, Social Security numbers and taxpayer ID numbers are prime targets for identity thieves. Current law requires that businesses report this information in certain filings with the Secretary of State, and once that happens, they become a public record. Public record law requires that, if requested, we have to provide that information. We have started a practice over the last couple of years that when we come across these numbers, we will redact them or black them out. We do maintain a separate unredacted version, and we do provide the redacted version to people, but we really don't have a legal standing to say no, you can't have the Social Security number of the person who's named in the filing. So really what the bill does is it allows us to adopt some practices and some protections for people that have filed documents in the past. A lot of our business registration documents, we keep them in perpetuity, so we have records that go back to 1850 and certainly records, over the last 20, 30 years that would contain Social Security numbers. And we, in recognition of current problems that exist in the world today, we'd like to take some steps to make some greater protections for people.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Threlkill?
Actually, I have one.
Representative Gerard.
You talk about having to have the approval of the Department of Agriculture within this bill. Could you kind of elaborate on that a little bit more, please?
The Central Filing System for Farm Products was authorized through federal legislation. It is a federal program that is adopted by individual states. So Oregon has adopted that, And basically what it is, it's farmers that maybe they grow wheat or they grow ryegrass, and they sell that commodity or they take out a loan when they're in the process of planting seed and growing. It's a collateralization system so that the people that loan them the money can file a statement with us, and that perfects their lien. The people that buy commodities, it's a small group, probably about 150 people in Oregon, they come and subscribe to a service that a list that we put together, and if they're a subscriber, and when they buy these commodities from the farmers, if they check the list and the farmer and the product is not listed, then they're exempt from any liability that may come down the line if a secured party failed to secure a lien.
Follow up. So if the Department of Agriculture doesn't like what they see, they have the right to nix this bill.
Their rules basically allow the creation of the unique identifier. So we would work with them to craft an identifier that meets their needs. So I don't see that as a barrier. So a couple of other things I would add. We are supportive of the -1 amendments, and we just became aware earlier today that there's a broader identity theft bill that was introduced in the Senate last week, and we expect that there would be some provisions that we'll have to reconcile between this bill and that bill if this one were to go forward.
Any other questions? Representative Thatcher?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at a letter from Reed Elsevier. That's opposed to the bill. Have you seen it?
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher. Yeah, I did see that just prior to coming over this morning. LexisNexis is the company that one of the subsidiary companies, and one of their subsidiaries is a subscriber, a regular customer to our public records. And what they get monthly is, under public records law, they get a copy of our business registration database, and they also get copies and images of our UCC filings. In the database records, we do not enter Social Security numbers, so the objections that they raised in the letter, I really don't. I'm a little confused by them, because the passage of this bill would not remove anything that they're not already not getting. You know, if there are Social Security numbers in documents, they're in the actual document. So you would have to pull up the document, get a copy of it, and have somebody go through, read the document, extract the Social Security number, and then go enter it into your own database or whatever purpose you wanted to use it for. So really the purpose of the bill is to make sure that paper document that may contain a Social Security number, we have the ability to go redact it and not provide. You know, we'll provide the copy, but the copy we provide will have the Social Security number blacked out.
Follow-up to that. Another concern that they raised was, it sounded like they thought it would take a lot of manpower to do that. And if you didn't have the funds to have somebody sit and redact it, that the public records would be then off-limits to people. It sounded like, to me, that's what one of the concerns was. And I wonder what your response to that would be.
One of the things that we're doing, the requests that we get a month, roughly 1,000 to 1,200 requests for copies of documents a month. It's not really a high volume, considering that we're probably filing closer to 12 to 15,000 new documents a month. So it's just a fraction of those that are coming back. Now, if we were having to provide all the copies, then that could be a problem. The other thing that we're working on right now is we're contracting with a vendor who will provide an automated redaction software tool that will go through our image documents, and it will automatically search for strings of numbers that we key in as our criteria, and it'll flag those, and we'll go through and redact anything. So that's something that we're working on right now. We hope to have implemented by the end of the biennium. And so I think that once that's done, that really alleviates that concern. Oh, and we're paying for that currently out of our operating budget.
Thank you.
Chairman. Representative Gordon.
Thank you, Chair Riley. You said that you were in favor of the Dash 1 amendments, and I have a question concerning the language 7 through 9 and what that actually does. And I know Tim Martinez is going to get up here and explain it, but I'd like to hear from you if you see that as being an impediment to this bill.
Chairman Riley, Representative Girard, I believe this portion of the bill is really addressing the ability to do electronic filing in the EFS program, and that the current rules state that the actual filing with the Secretary of State has to be signed, this allows the security agreement, if a bank has a security agreement with the farmer, that takes the place of that actual signature requirement. That wouldn't have to be filed with us, and would allow us to implement an electronic filing system so that we could speed the process of getting these transactions into us and operate more efficiently.
We're in favor of that.
I am too.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Do we finish up this and then go into the work session to get the amendment? Why don't we okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to call Andrea Meyer.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. Andrea Meyer, I'm the Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. And since it's the first time appearing before this committee, I'd like to briefly just talk about what the ACLU does for those who may not be aware. We protect civil liberties and particularly the rights contained in the Oregon and federal constitution. We've been a national organization for over 80 years and in Oregon over 50 years. We are nonpartisan. We do not take a position on candidates, but we do take ballot measure positions and, of course, get involved in legislation and litigation, which brings me here today to talk a little bit about concerns with privacy with House Bill 2090. You know, when we're talking about the public records, which we certainly fully support, but when we start talking about date of birth and address and linking with Social Security numbers, we do get concerned with identity theft that I think was raised earlier by the supporters of this. And as to Section 2, Subsection 1, we certainly support that language of not disclosing. Where we want to raise some concerns, at least, is Subsection 2 of Section 2, which is giving some level of immunity. In this case, to an officer and employee of the Secretary of State, if they act in good faith. Not sure what good faith means and how it will be applied, but one of the concerns I just want to raise is and there is legislation that's coming about in terms of providing more security for someone who is a subject of identity theft in terms of freezing their accounts, but when either the public sector or the private sector is immune from any liability, no matter how negligent they were or reckless disregard for this kind of data, we get concerned. There's both insider kind of reckless negligent behavior and there's outsider hacking, how secure you make the kind of data. And so we just want to raise that concern that as we create more and more databases and rely on those, we in the ACLU and I think those in the technology world are really suspicious that any database is secure. But there should be some standard before immunity or at least there should be no immunity in some situations, be it less directed at maybe the individuals, but at the entity that has the duty to secure and hold dear the data. And I just want to point out, I mean, the you know, the records, it sounds like they do need to be cleaned up, and that may be a long process. If they're paper records, it sounds like they have a great process electronically going in. So we think that they can and should do this, but I raise concerns about immunity. And just as an aside, but I think as part of this big thing we're familiar with, at least the Secretary of State working on the multi-state voter file. And that, again, is a database that's going to be huge, multi-state. What's going to be collected in that? What will be released? How will the federal government use that? So as we sort of build these databases, we ask you to look critically at these things. So thank you. That is my testimony for today. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Representing Greg.
Actually, in reading that, I can understand your concern a little bit. It seems to me like this bill is to eliminate the need for giving out the social security number, but then they give themselves immunity if they do.
Chair Riley, Representative Gerard, that would be my reading as well, some form of immunity, which was what brings me here today.
Okay.
And I guess it's up to the sponsors to...
I don't usually agree with ACLU.
Again, we're nonpartisan, and I think when it comes to privacy issues, a lot of people agree with us.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
But I won't tell.
Oh, good.
Okay. Your secret's safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the two work sessions out of the two public hearings that I have open on 2090 and 2091, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2090, and I'm going to ask Mr. Martinez if you come forward and talk to us about the amendment.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. With me at the stand is Ken Sherman, OBA counsel. He's the one that drafted these amendments. We have been working with the Secretary of State's office for probably 6 to 9 months on this bill. They brought it to us in the interim and wanted us to take a look at it. We're not here to discuss the issues that the ACLU brought, but we do have some friendly amendments that the Secretary of State's office has graciously accepted, and I'll, with your permission, let Mr. Sherman explain those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Ken Sherman. I'm an attorney here in Salem, and I represent the Oregon Bankers Association. The Dash 1 amendments are an attempt on our part to incorporate into the Oregon law some recent changes that were made through the adoption by the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Association rules adopted at the federal level to implement the Federal Food Security Act and changes that had been made in that legislation back in 2002. This all gets a little bit technical, but as others have said, the effective financing statement is part of what needs to be filed by a creditor when you're making a loan on farm products, which includes both things that grow out of the ground and livestock. And the purpose of the EFS is to create a mechanism whereby people who would buy those products in the ordinary course of business have an effective way of finding out who may have a lien on those products so that when they buy them, they know that lien holder is going to be paid off. That's good for my client because the bank's getting paid, and it's good for the farmer because the loan's paid off, and obviously it's good for the purchaser who walks away with clear title. The EFS system has been in place. It's a federally created thing. Each state has to go through and get its effective financing statement regimen approved by the federal government. We did that back in the 90s, I believe, when the Federal Food Security Act was first enacted. And now we have these amendments. And so these dash one amendments are simply designed to bring our section of the law, which is 80.115, into line with these recent amendments to the federal administrative rules. The changes that are made, there's essentially three changes made in this section by this dash one amendments. The first one appears on the first page, lines 7 through 9. Currently, an effective financing statement must contain the name and address of the person indebted to the secured party. A simpler way of saying that is the name of the debtor. Well, the newly amended federal administrative rules don't say the name of the debtor. They say instead each person who is subjecting the farm product to the security interest, and that may be the debtor or it could be a third party. Sometimes, rarely, but sometimes you'll have a situation where the farmer's the debtor, but the crop, there's some relationship between the farmer and whoever owns the crop, and so they're putting up the security. So the language is just a little bit more inclusive. The second change is at lines 19 and 20 on the first page, and this again is to bring it consistent with the new language in the GPSA rules, to change from having it signed, authorized, or otherwise authenticated by the secured party to having those things by the debtor. And then the third change is to, and that's the new subsection 7 at lines 25 to 29 on the second page of the Dash 1 amendments. This really just brings into the statute something that the Secretary of State already did by administrative rule following the last session when these the last version of these changes were made. This simply says that when we say signed, authorized, or otherwise authenticated, that test will be satisfied by the fact that there is a security agreement between the parties in which a security interest has been granted in the farm product. So those are the Dash 1 amendments. We believe that it's necessary that these be adopted in order to bring Oregon's effective financing statement rules into consistency with the new federal rules, and we would urge their passage. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Gerard.
I hate to hog the time here, but the question I have you reviewed these rules with farm groups such as Farm Bureau? Or?
I have not personally, Representative Gerard. I'm not sure whether Tim, whether you've done that or whether anyone else has done that on our behalf. We have talked with the American Bankers Association regarding these changes. I think they're exceedingly technical. They don't, what they do is to make a good system that has worked for a long time continue to work without interruption. And I think that's in the interest of all the players.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chair, I think Ken is absolutely right. We're not making any policy changes here. We're just complying with some federal changes. So I would be happy to do so, but I do not believe they would have any concern or interest in this.
Seeing no other questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to comment or testify on this amendment? We need a motion to adopt this amendment. Is anyone so inclined? Wouldn't there be discussion about it?
Yeah, actually, I just because it is an amendment, and I know the posting doesn't always go through, isn't always something that everyone is totally aware of in this building. This is pretty technical stuff, and I would kind of like to have some input from farm groups, or at least have them have the ability to do that. Does that sound? I'm just trying to be protective here.
Well, yeah,
and especially with the language, whether or not a debtor. Now that sort of bothers me, and I if they probably don't have any problems with that. And besides the Dash 1 amendments, I actually agree with the AFL's or the ACLU that probably that one.
You have the cameras on.
Hey.
Okay.
This could hurt me in my district here, but in that case, I actually do agree with them and that should be deleted.
So, I'm going to ask the Bankers Association if you would go away and talk with the Farm Bureau or whoever else, you know, that could be interested in this, and come back to us with that information. Is that acceptable to you? And just let us know how that goes, and we'll go on from there. I'm going to close this work session on House Bill 2090, and I'm going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2091 at this time.
Chair, if I may, House Bill 2091 would modify the structure of certain fees that are charged by the Secretary of State, fees that are currently statutorily designated as $10 would be changed to up to $10, and I believe Mr. Alcoll will be able to speak to those in more detail. If I may also, I forgot this the first time, so I'll mention this. Mr. Chair, you'll note on the staff measure summary that this says that the measure has a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. However, we received a notice that there was no fiscal impact, and the Speaker's office has afforded the committee the permission, if it's their desire, to rescind that referral and send it straight to the floor.
Go ahead.
Chairman Riley, members of the committee, again, my name is Peter Threlkeld, Director of the Corporation Division. So I hope this is probably one of the simplest bills you'll see this session. Basically... during the last interim, we were looking at, as we've been working to develop electronic filing applications to create more efficiency and cost effectiveness in our processes. One of the things that occurred to us is that a good incentive would be to offer a lower fee to those people that file electronically. Most of our processes are very labor intensive. We have staff that have to file and data enter documents into the system and go through an acceptance process. We believe that when we get into electronic filing, it's going to be a lot more streamlined and we'll be able to eventually reduce our costs for our operations. And this bill basically, when we had spoke with the Attorney General, we had latitude in some of our other statutes that we administer, but we came to the Uniform Commercial Code, and the statute says that the fee is $10, and it offered no ambiguity, no flexibility to us. So we just wanted to propose that the fee shall not exceed $10, then by rule we could come back once we have electronic filing available and specify that electronic filing can have a lower fee. We can use that as an incentive to maximize the number of electronic filings that we receive and pass on some of those savings to the business filer, the business customer. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Patrick?
Let me just get this straight. You're asking us permission if we will tell you that you can lower fees for our filing. Did I get that right?
Chairman Riley, Representative Thatcher, yes, that's exactly right. We would
Hallelujah.
Love to be able to lower the fees decrease the costs of our operations and interactions with our office.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Edwards.
Should we have a press conference about this?
I think we just did.
Seriously. And you're sure you don't want the opportunity to go before Ways and Means and tell them that you actually are doing something to help with the efficiency and save money?
It's my understanding I'm going to have that opportunity here in about a month through the budget process. But
not on this one.
Well, this could have a big financial impact.
No further questions.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Well, not yet. Is there anybody Don't go away. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on this? Seeing that there's nobody else in the room, I guess not.
Let me go to work session. Here's a script.
Here's your script right there.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2091.
Oh, wait. I'm going to close the public hearing on 2091, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2091. Representative Garak.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2091 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2091 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion passes and the bill is sent to the floor. Representative Edwards, would you like to carry this bill for us? And you can have your press conference.
I'd love to.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2091, and I'm going to close this session of the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology.